Track 12 and our feature article has been written by Tavistock-based historian Simon Dell, and he shares the story of the Dartmoor Prison Riot of 1932, often known as the Dartmoor Mutiny. And as he explains, trouble started one January day over the consistency of the prisoners' breakfast porridge. January the 24th sees the anniversary of one of the most notorious incidents in the history of the British penal system, the Dartmoor Mutiny. HMP Dartmoor has recently been temporarily closed for 2 years while a decision as to its future is being made. Dartmoor Prison has always had the unenviable reputation of being one of the most famous of prisons in the world. Its reputation has been built on over 200 years of sometimes checkered history. The years that followed the First World War saw immense social change in Great Britain, and the Depression of the 1920s became a breeding ground for a different sort of criminal. The new name given to this gangster was the Motor Car Bandit. Gone were the days more suited to the felonious occupation of the footpads and Charlie pieces of the world, and in came ruthless young men with little or no regard for the lives of their victims. They came from a generation of young men who had spent the best part of their youthful years carrying firearms in the trenches and taking part in meticulously considered raids on the enemy. From the early 1920s, the discipline at Dartmoor Prison actually increased severely, imposed by the new governor, Mr. Stanley Norton Roberts, who was most unpopular, and imposed changes that were disliked and caused tension amongst inmates and staff alike. With the disquiet amongst the inmates and complaints being made regularly about anything and everything, it was hardly surprising that there was a protest about the state of the porridge at breakfast time on Friday, January the 22nd. It seemed that an excess of water had been added to the porridge vat, as the consistency of the porridge was described as being like water with grains floating about in it. That afternoon, prison officer Ernest Birch was on duty, and at the end of the working day, he gave the usual order for the men to fall out, when he was immediately pounced on by one prisoner, Thomas Davis, who slashed Birch's face. Davis was eventually subdued and removed to the punishment block to be dealt with by the governor at a later hearing. That evening, just after midnight, Governor Roberts went into the prison kitchen to inspect the porridge that was being prepared for the prisoners' breakfast later that morning, Saturday, January the 23rd. After finding it to be acceptable and in good order, he then went away with high hopes that the unfortunate events of the previous day could be put behind them. Unfortunately, it was discovered in the morning that the porridge had apparently been subjected to some mischievous doctoring, and it was suspected that someone working in the kitchen had added water to it to make it inedible. At the planned church service later that morning, the governor spoke with the intention of addressing the prisoners to explain the situation, but he was shouted down. The following morning, January the 24th, the governor had arrived at the prison at 5 a.m. to check the porridge and found that the contents of one vat was perfect, but those of another were watery and had clearly been tampered with again. Not surprisingly, he had then become very worried and called in as many staff as he could muster. It was then that an incident occurred that provided the spark to ignite the powder keg, which had been ready to explode for several days. Another prisoner officer, Udi, was slashed with a bladed weapon. He was taken to the prison hospital for treatment, then came out back on duty to supervise exercise in the yards. When he called the prisoners to form up, they revolted. Udi now attempted to reason with the rioting prisoners, but to no avail. Instead, the ringleaders ordered several of the other convicts to make their way to the rest of the parade grounds and to stir up their colleagues to revolt against the guards. The result was that about 50 or so rioting convicts rushed off to A, C and D parade grounds, from where, of course, other prisoners would have heard the commotion and realised by now that the revolt was underway. The focus of attention of some of the marauding prisoners was the punishment block, and their intention was to storm it and release confined prisoners, including Davies, who had slashed Officer Birch's face on the previous Friday. The mob succeeded in snatching Officer Tucker's keys, so was then able to unlock the doors of the cells in E Hall and complete the mission. Whilst this was taking place, gate officer Dowes, on duty at the main gate, saw what was happening, and just after 9:30 a.m, he telephoned Plymouth City Police to inform them that the convicts had started a mutiny and to ask for reinforcements to be sent.
He also requested that the Devon Constabulary be informed and to send help. Having done that, he then telephoned Crown Hill Barracks in Plymouth, where the 8th Infantry Brigade, which included members of the 1st Battalion of the Worcestershire Regiment, was stationed, also asking for help. The prison administration block was well alight when a ladder was put up against the governor's office window and convicts broke into his office, shouting that they were going to kill him. The governor and his deputy, however, managed to escape and made their way to an old building known as one of the French prisons, where they then hid away for the duration of the mutiny. The chief constable of the Plymouth City Police gave orders for every available man to be transported to Princetown to assist in quelling the mutiny. Major Morris, the chief constable of the Devon Constabulary, likewise gave similar orders. When the reinforcements of the 1st Battalion of the Worcestershire Regiment from Crown Hill Barracks arrived, in their ageing lorries loaded with infantry, rifles and 2 machine guns, they were not directed into the prison. Instead, they were positioned just outside to contain the perimeter wall in order to prevent escapes. One account from a soldier responsible for one of the machine guns records that he was situated directly outside the main entrance of the prison, where his machine gun was placed covering the entrance to the jail. A few of the more violent prisoners were focused on one thing only, the wholesale slaughter of the guards. They'd armed themselves with stolen weapons from butchery and workshops or carried bedlegs with glass embedded in them and went on to attack anyone, including other prisoners, who stood in their way. The carnage continued until the prisoners had complete control of the interior of the prison. The police officers arrived at the main prison gates and entered under the command of the chief constable. Police truncheons were wielded left and right, leaving convicts lying on the ground in the officers' wake. By 1 p.m. all was over, with the exception of the firefighting efforts being carried out by the Plymouth Fire Brigade, whose main aim now was to save the administration block. It can only be regarded as a miracle that nobody was killed and no prisoners had escaped. Following the riot, the Home Secretary ordered a commission of inquiry to be led by Herbert de Pack, KC, who went to great lengths to uncover the reasons for the mutiny and the events surrounding it. Because of the unsuitability of Tavistock Court, the magistrates went to the prison, where the cases were later formally opened and adjourned to be held at a special court that was held at the local Duchy Hall in Princetown Village, which was being equipped for the subsequent trials. The Assize Court was presided over by the Right Honourable Justice Williams Viscount Finlay KBE, one of the justices of the Queen's Bench Division of the High Court of Justice. It took the jury 5 hours to reach their verdicts. 23 convicts were found guilty of various offences, including riotous assembly and malicious damage, but 10 were found not guilty. Prisoners received sentences ranging from 6 months to 12 years for the man convicted of injuring Officer Birch. In all, Mr. Justice Finlay passed sentences on May 13, 1932, totalling a few months short of 100 years. The mutiny on January 24th, 1932 might unwittingly have been one of the most important progressive events to take place at the prison. As a result of rioting, conditions for prisoners were closely scrutinised, work allocations were received, wages were paid for work and penal systems were updated. Perhaps the overall benefits enjoyed by successive inmates who followed those motor car bandits of yesteryear might well be regarded as the phoenix rising from the ashes. The full story of the events of January 24th, 1932 can be read in Simon Dell's book Mutiny on the Moor, available in the Dartmoor Prison Museum shop at Princetown.